is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is hour two of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. I'm Stormy Bonantoni alongside Mike Somich in for Michael Lombardi today. You can always catch Mike every weekend right here on VSiN and DraftKings Network on The Handle. And we have a lot to get to in the NFL, in college basketball. And let's start there real quickly, Mike, because there's a game about to tip off that you have action in.
Yeah, how about a little bit of in-show sweat here, Stormy? Yes. We had success with it last week with that first period under with the Hurricanes. Let's go to college hoops here. Georgia Tech taking on Notre Dame, about to tip in the first round of the ACC tournament. I laid the point and a half here with Notre Dame. They beat Georgia Tech twice during the regular season. Neither of the teams very great, but the style that Notre Dame likes to play plays well against Georgia Tech. The total's pretty low, sitting in the 130s here. I think Notre Dame able to take care of business today, cover the 1.5 and move along.
Beautiful. 1.5 the spread, total 132. Notre Dame and Georgia Tech kicking off a little ACC action this afternoon. And we'll get back to college hoops in about 15 minutes to Michael Calabrese, college hoops analyst over there at the Action Network. He is going to join us live. But we've had a lot of news and notes coming through in the NFL as this legal tampering, or let's just call it open negotiation period. Just the terms legal and tampering together just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Fit.
It
no.
just doesn't work. New league year beginning tomorrow, and we'll get these final deals coming through, get the reality of a lot more of these deals as well, which, because Mike, that's something that you talked about earlier in the program. We're seeing these numbers and terms that are being spit out by agents and insiders, but what are these contracts really?
Yeah, the two that jump out to me. I mean, Josh Jacobs, 4 for 48, is actually 1 for 14. Everything after that's team options. Baker Mayfield down there gets 3 for 115. It's actually a 1-year, $40 million deal. And after that, the team controls whether or not he stays on the books or not. So it's important to note, once we see the real contracts, what's the actual long-term aspect of this from these teams? So I think we're going to see a lot of deals that are really 1-year deals with team options afterward versus the actual term and dollar amount we're seeing right now.
Yeah, so just keep that in mind as we go through. One of the biggest deals, though, to come about today, biggest names, rather, Derrick Henry is headed to the Baltimore Ravens. So the NFL's most productive running back over the last decade is going to join the league's number one rushing attack. With Gus Edwards on his way out, Derrick Henry steps in. 2 years, $16 million, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, who broke this news earlier. Deal that could be worth up to $20 million, including 9 guaranteed in the first year. What was your initial impression?
There's another one. 9 guaranteed in the first year. Who knows what after
that? Mean?
We'll see what happens. I think it's a good fit here for Derrick Henry. Look, he's not the bell cow back that we had seen from Derrick Henry in the previous seasons, but he fits really well as a thunder lightning kind of guy. And that's what he's falling into here in a Ravens backfield, which is, and I will say, decently crowded, just because you have Lamar Jackson back there who's going to run the football as well. But adding Derrick Henry as your goal line back, as your short yardage back, and having him be the thunder to Mitchell's lightning as well, I think is a good fit for that backfield. And it's a veteran player on a team that wants to win now, has their window open right now to try and compete and win for a Super Bowl. So I think it's a great fit here for Derrick Henry and the Ravens.
We'll stick in the AFC North because the Browns have a new backup quarterback. Obviously, we know they went through 5 quarterbacks. Last year, Joe Flacco ultimately ends up winning comeback player of the year. Deshaun Watson played all but 1 awesome half of football. Everything else that we saw from him was below average, I would say, or average. But Jameis Winston agreeing to terms with Cleveland on a 1-year deal to back up our guy Deshaun Watson.
Interesting backup option here. Obviously, high risk, high reward quarterback. Loves throwing touchdowns. Loves throwing interceptions.
Loves eating W's. So we'll loves eating W's.
Yeah. It makes it interesting. He's one of the more interesting players to watch who's on the football field, that's for sure. This division is very interesting as well. Like I like what the Browns did getting Judy for essentially peanuts with a 1-year prove-it deal there. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out from a numbers perspective. Right now, we're seeing the Ravens at plus 115. You've got the Bengals there at plus 165. This is a huge year for the Cincinnati Bengals. They need to somehow keep Burrow healthy in the preseason. We haven't seen him get through a preseason, and it's been freak injuries. It's not been anything that's been their fault, but he hasn't been healthy through a preseason to actually see what this Bengals team can do. We know that T. Higgins requested a trade. We'll see if that actually happens. Feels like he's going to stay there in Cincinnati and play for the tag this year. This may be their 1 year to really have that opportunity. They're plus 165. And the Browns sitting there plus 550 and the Steelers plus 950. I think anyone can win this division, Stormy. I think this is one of those more wide open divisions when we're talking about it. I don't love the Steelers at plus 950 simply because I'm not really excited about Russell Wilson being the quarterback I'm going to take in a really tough division. But the Browns sitting there plus 550, they still seem like the team that there's some value left here.
The Steelers, by the way, were 12-1 prior to the Russell Wilson acquisition, now plus 950. And we mentioned earlier all the odds movement on the Philadelphia Eagles. According to DraftKings Sportsbook Insights this morning, the Eagles, in terms of handle, were the most bet team to win the Super Bowl, but the Eagles and Steelers taking the most bets. So a lot of people have been buying in on the Russell Wilson mania, I guess, of him going over to Pittsburgh, even though he's not the de facto starter right away. The anticipation is like he's not going to be anointed QB1. This is going to be a competition with Kenny Pickett.
Is it? Is it really?
I don't think Kenny Pickett can win it, but that's what it's supposed to be.
If you're Russell Wilson, are you really going to a team that didn't tell you you're going to start? Like, to me, that if you're, you have to go play somewhere if you want to be, if you're Russell Wilson, you have to go start somewhere. And so I would be shocked if Russell Wilson doesn't end up being the day one starter. It feels like this is a move to move along from Pickett, move away from him, and turn the keys over to a veteran quarterback who kind of looks washed. We'll see what happens when he actually plays in Pittsburgh. He's got good weapons out there again, like, and the defense should be very good. Patrick Queen just signs with the Steelers as well, so that's a nice addition there to that defense. But man, it's hard to take Russell Wilson from what we saw over the last 2 years in Denver and just say that, okay, yes, he's going to make this leap forward and go back to some version of himself.
I agree. And like, I'm not a huge like Russell Wilson believer by any means, but even the fact that this past year, which was like, let's call an average season, right? It was an average type season for Russell Wilson. It was not nearly the catastrophic downfall that he had the season prior, but he had more touchdowns this year than Pittsburgh Steelers quarterbacks the last two seasons combined. So even that in and of itself tells me that we're going to have an upgrade and it's going to be a better Steelers group on that side. We also saw the Vikings as Kirk Cousins signs with the Atlanta Falcons. Sam Darnold signs a one-year $10 million deal to go there, be a little bit of a bridge quarterback, and then see what they ultimately do in the draft.
Yeah, I like the Sam Darnold signing. Look, there's upside here. He was a high draft pick when he was in New York, when he was in Carolina. There was nothing around him. The coaching staffs absolutely stunk. I would have loved to see what he could have done in San Francisco last year. Now he's going to play in what is the best offensive play caller, or with the best offensive play caller he's ever been with and actually played football for. I'm not going to count this San Francisco team with the best weapons as well. You've still got Addison. You got Jefferson, added Mixon. Like this is a decent football team. I'm sorry, not Mixon. Added Aaron Jones. This is a good football team from an offensive weapon perspective. If he can flourish, this could be a one where you see, though, that, you know, like you said, he's a bridge quarterback. He could become the quarterback if he's able to play well this season. It's someone that they could try and get on the cheap here, or go ahead and draft someone in the draft and use this year as a learning year for that quarterback. So I like the Sam Darnold signing here. I think if you're the Vikings, you're kind of looking at your division and saying it's going to be a long shot for us to really be able to compete considering what we have above us at this point. So why not take a shot with someone like Sam Darnold?
While we're in this division, you mentioned Aaron Jones. What have you thought about the way some of these running backs got done dirty to an extent? Not done dirty, but like it shows that it's a business, right? Like Aaron Jones, you think that we're going to get him and Josh Jacobs together. They signed Jacobs and then Jones is released. You see what happened with Joe Mixon and the Cincinnati Bengals. And like it's definitely one of those days that shows you, okay, this is a business. This is a job and teams are going to do what's best for them and move on.
Yeah, well, the problem if you're a running back is twofold at this point. First off, running in the NFL just not nearly as important as it was 10 years ago. So immediately your value is knocked down there if you cannot catch the football out of the backfield. That's why we saw Christian McCaffrey get the contract he did. He's versatile. He can play running back. He can play wide receiver. The second problem is these guys are replaceable in the draft. I mean, you have Isaiah Pacheco go late in the draft. You have someone like Achane go late in the draft. You've got these guys who you can draft every year in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round that can come in and be effective running backs for these teams that are on cap friendly deals that you have control over for 4 to 5 years versus these running backs, which also look, they wear down faster than other positions. Mm-hmm. We've consistently seen that where you're not going to have a 15-year career from a lot of these running backs. Derrick Henry is one in a million. He's not the outlier of the example there. So when you're looking at this running back position, it's hard as a front office to justify, you know, having more than 5-6% of your salary cap in a position that is easily replaceable and likely to deteriorate over a 4 or 5 year deal. So I'm not surprised we're seeing this. I think it's going to be something we're going to continue seeing the trend. And you're going to see a lot of these contracts that we saw that are multi-year deals that are 3 for 36, 4 for 48 are really going to be 1 year deals with team options because they want to have control over whether or not they need to keep that running back moving forward as they get older and further in their career.
Two other big names that we're still waiting to see in this division specifically, Danielle Hunter and Justin Fields. Like, it is so crazy to think about him being the odd man out. We talked about it last segment, this game of quarterback musical chairs. He was so hyped up at the beginning. It thought it was a done deal. He'd be such a great opportunity to elevate any team. Now nobody's talking about him. There's no market for him, and he's probably not going to be a starter next year.
Yeah, the Bears overplayed their hand. It's that simple. I feel bad for Justin Fields in a way because he didn't really have much control over this. The Bears were asking for too much. And because of that, teams filled the voids with other players and said, hey, look, we're not willing to take the chance on Justin Fields. He's got 1 year left on what is a pretty cap friendly deal. But then you're going to have to sign him to an extension. So it's not just what you're giving up. It's the investment you're making in Justin Fields. And that makes it a lot tougher for these teams to say, yeah, we're going to go ahead and pay what Chicago is asking without having any control over this player for multiple years. So I'm not shocked, considering Chicago is asking for second and third, first in some cases, that the market has kind of dried out for them. But it's a shame for Justin Fields, because if he was a free agent, he would have landed somewhere already. But because of the situation he's in, it's really tough. With Hunter, I'm surprised there's not more of a market for him. I mean, he's 13% pass rush win rate last year. He's this guy who can get sacks. He's clearly not washed at this point. I expected him to be somewhere by now.
Legarius Sneed, another name. We got to figure out what might happen there. T. Higgins, who has requested a trade from the Bengals. So still a number of dominoes that we need to see how or if they may fall. But when we come back here on the Lombardi Line, getting into a little college hoops, five teams with an opportunity to punch their ticket to the big dance today. Michael Calabrese of the Action Network is going to join us next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready for the ultimate slam dunk when you download the free VSiN college basketball betting primer and get full VSiN Pro access until March 17th. This primer will have tournament betting tips and trends for every round, plus strategies for brackets and betting futures. Bet the tournament smarter this year. Download the free men's college basketball betting primer now. Again, get free VSiN Pro access to everything we do through March 17th. VSiN.com/guide is where you can sign up. That's VSIN.com/guide. And speaking of college hoops, we've got five teams looking to punch their tickets tonight. Five conferences beginning their respective league tournaments today as well. Alongside Mike Somich, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And let's talk it all over with Michael Calabrese, who joins us on the Progressive guest line now, college basketball betting analyst over there at Action Network. Lots of potential bets to be made today. What's one game or one conference that you're particularly interested in later?
So I've been interested in the CAA this whole year, not just because they changed their name from the Colonial to the Coastal. There's some really good basketball being played there. We'll start with Charleston. They're laying 8.5 against Stony Brook. They're top 60 in both KenPom, O, and Pace. But what's interesting in this matchup against Stony Brook is the Seawolves want to slow things down. But if you look at Evan Maya's new pace adjustment metric, it notes that Charleston is one of the best teams in the country when they're slowed down from their preferred pace. They actually rank 14th nationally in games in which they play significantly slower. So why is that? Well, they crash the offensive glass, they don't turn the ball over, and they share the ball really well in the half court. Smith, Brazovic, and Burnham have played together for the entire season, all 33 games. Their trio averages 37 points. They won by 6 up on the North Shore of Long Island against the Seawolves earlier in the season. I think this is going to be a coronation for the Cougars here, a team that's gotten more buzz in recent years in terms of the program from Charleston. I think this could be a sleeper team in March Madness. I think they're going to win going away here in the final.
At Charleston, one of those teams I'm looking forward to. I laid the 9.5 here. We've seen this number move all the way up to 10. Seawolves also playing 4 games in 4 days, had a double overtime game 2 days ago, a tough game against Hofstra last night. So we'll see how the legs are here for the Seawolves if they're able to swim up against the current and get it done. Game that everyone's going to be looking at here tonight, the Gonzaga St. Mary's game. It seems like these two teams face each other every year in the WCC final. It's the exact same thing here. We got Gonzaga with a little bit of a home court advantage here in Las Vegas. This game going to be played at Orleans Arena tonight on ESPN. What are you doing with Gonzaga and St. Mary's?
So this comes down to personnel. No Jefferson. He's been out with a knee injury for, 2 months now for St. Mary's, but no Wessels, which is key in terms of their depth in the front court. Saxon and Forbes absolutely cannot get into foul trouble, and they're going to be tested because Mark Few has been around the block. He's going to feed Graham Ike in this game, try to get the short front court for St. Mary's in terms of availability into foul trouble. Ike had 24 and 10 in their last meeting. They controlled that game end to end. They win by 13 going away. And when you look at what St. Mary's does, they're 16th in KenPom defense and fourth from last in all Division I in terms of pace. It works when they have those bodies to throw on the defensive glass. They're still the number one team nationally in defensive rebounding percentage. But what's interesting, since Wessels, who was in a sling, he's had some arm injuries. Coach Bennett has now said they're going to put him on the shelf and save him for March Madness. In those 3 weeks that he's been out, they've slid all the way back to 27th in defensive rebounding percentage, which is still great, but they can't hang their hat on it and absolutely, you know, lock teams off the offensive glass. So I think the Zags are still the play here. I would play it up to -5.
Zags, of course, winning that most recent matchup last Saturday, 70-57, rubber match on a neutral court here in Vegas. Again, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 Eastern on ESPN at the Orleans Arena. Looking ahead to some more of these conference tournaments, the SEC gets underway tomorrow. Tennessee won the regular season. They're favored to win the tournament as well as plus 130, followed by Auburn plus 260, Kentucky 4-1, Alabama plus 550. But you and a guest that we had earlier on the program in Will Hill both have interest in Florida at that 20-1 price. What stands out about the Gators?
Well, first of all, they're electric in terms of how they crash the offensive glass. And I like that in tournament settings because you're going to have games where you shoot a little bit above your average, a little bit below. Can you get those extra possessions to grind out wins that may come down to a possession or here or there? I also love their backcourt. You know, what they were able to do in the transfer portal really bolstered their roster. And I think it took a little bit of time for them to come together and to essentially realize all the potential that they had. And when you look at how they play against better teams, this is another Evan Maia metric. Teams punching up or punching below their weight. There is no power conference team in America that plays better against quote unquote quality opponents, calling about top 75 in the entire country, than the Florida Gators. It's going to require that to go ahead and beat a team like Alabama, to potentially beat Tennessee in the championship. You have to be able to be a giant killer, and the Gators have it. My price point to get in on them was 12-1. That's what I had circled. So 20-1. I was absolutely hopping on that. I think people get scared away a little bit by the extra game, not getting that double bye. But I think Florida is just teeming with value. And this is a team that could probably use the SEC tournament, win or lose, as a springboard into March Madness and making a deep run.
Yeah, I love this look, Michael, too. I played him at 20-1. I've got him 70-1 to win the NCAA tournament. They've beaten Alabama. They've beaten Kentucky. They've beaten Auburn. They've got a lot of quality wins on their schedule, and they get to go through both Alabama and Kentucky before they have to play Tennessee. So you could monetize it as well if you're able to make it to the finals and get a matchup against Tennessee. Let's switch gears here. Look at another conference tournament. We've got the Big 12, which has been the highest rated basketball conference all season long. Houston, a pretty big favorite sitting there at minus 140. Do you think this is just open and shut? Houston gets the job done. Is there anyone else in this conference tournament you're interested in?
I think we learned a lot about Baylor in that head-to-head with Houston. Houston building up a huge halftime lead and then nearly melting away. Baylor had a chance to win it on the foul line in regulation. I think they have the goods to be able to attack a historically good Houston half-court defense. But in terms of the matchup itself for Houston as they go from round to round, I'm more concerned with them earlier in the tournament than I am late. They've kind of played down and had sleepy second halves. I mentioned what they did against Baylor. It also almost bit them against Oklahoma. So being able to go through those long stretches where they're not scoring for 4 and 5 minutes, their defense can be as good as they want to be, but they got to put the ball in the hoop. So I still think there's some issues with this team. I still think there's some warts on their resume. I would not play them at this number. Baylor's the only one I'm interested in. You have a lot of teams kind of leaking oil headed into the tournament, Kansas namely. So there weren't a whole lot of secondary options that I liked, but I'll go ahead and play the Bears here. Also, I think it's a bonus to get a coach who's won a national championship, who understands tournament play, and Coach Drew to be able to get it done.
Michael Calabrese of the Action Network joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Now, you mentioned the College of Charleston as a potential smaller conference team that could make a run. They're a one seed in their tournament. We haven't seen many one seeds actually get out of their conference tournaments so far to kick things off. Are you looking at teams like that, like College of Charleston, like some of these one seeds and smaller conferences still to come to get over the hump and potentially look at some of those Final Four numbers or NCAA tournament numbers that you can hedge off of later if they are able to make a run, because they are more poised to have success than some of these other teams that randomly end up winning? Like, I feel so bad for some of those mid-major leagues that don't have the best team from their conference all season long get the bid to the tournament because they're these one bid auto bid leagues and it's somebody else going. If the College of Charleston wins tonight, then it's their top seed, it's their best team getting in. Are you looking at any of those?
You didn't exactly tee me up to talk about Indiana State, but I'll go ahead and say it.
Okay.
Because they were one of those top seeds that didn't win Arch Madness, that I actually think if they're able to sneak in, the narrative is right now that, oh, we should feel bad for Indiana State. They didn't get it done. If they get in that 11 play-in game, I think that is a launching pad for them to make a deep run. We've seen it year after year, those play-in games from the 11th spot, winning not only over the sixth, but winning in the round of 32 and getting to the second weekend. They bring so much to the table, leading the country in rim and three rate, which is a really useful metric in terms of efficiency, how you choose your shots on a nightly basis. They're a team that can blitz opponents if they get into the field of 68. So I have them circled. But I agree, a lot of these top seeds are losing. And a big part of it is this year, more so than any in recent memory, teams have struggled, even quality teams, top 25, top 10, on the road. So winning on the road, winning at neutral sites has been difficult, even for, you know, these giants of the mid-majors. You look at a team like Colgate, who's going to play tomorrow night. They have struggled a little bit. I wouldn't be shocked to see a team like Lehigh steal a bid from the Patriot League. And that's kind of been a common story across the low majors throughout college basketball this season, with so many teams struggling to win once they leave their home floors.
Yeah, Indiana State, currently last four in or first four out, depending on what version of bracketology you're looking at right now. They're going to be an interesting team if they can make the tournament. We've talked about some teams you like. Every year we see some of these Power Five teams fall apart when we get into the NCAA tournament. Are there any teams that you're interested in fading when we get to the big dance?
I'll tell you this. I'd like to see Villanova win one or two in the Big East tournament just so I can unload the bank account on them in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I don't see them having the consistency, and the shooting is the biggest issue for me. When I faded them this year, you just dig into their metrics. They're outside of the top 200 in terms of shooting efficiency. That is not going to get it done in March. I understand that a lot of these games can turn into rock fights and half court battles and a lot of TV timeouts and reviews, and you have to be efficient in the half court, but eventually you got to knock down some shots. So I look at them. I also look at teams that have wild swings from home and away shooting. Alabama's the team that I have circled. It's one of the reasons why I'm on Florida in this SEC tournament. Their defense is so poor. They're buried in the 300s in points per possession defense on the road. So I think that's going to transfer over to these neutral site tournaments, both in the SEC and March Madness.
You are awesome, Michael. Thank you so much for doing this. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, everybody.
Michael Calabrese, check out his work at the Action Network. You can follow him on X at East Breeze as well. And for Inquiring Minds, Indiana State -115 to make the tournament right now if you have interest on Fire. And we'll be right back on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you're not a registered VSiN.com user yet, now is the time, because you can create a free account today and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do through the NCAA Championship Week leading up to Selection Sunday. Sign up today at VSiN.com/Champ Week and get instant VSiN Pro access, including our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus our Big Dance Betting Primer. Again, this is a VSiN Pro free preview to help you bet the tournament smarter. Create a free account now at VSiN.com/Champ Week. That's VSIN.com/Champ Week. And I mean, Champ Week has been crazy. We already have a handful of automatic bids secured in the A-Sun. Stetson is making their first appearance in the Big Dance. Drake beat top seed Indiana State, who we were talking about moments ago, in the Missouri Valley Champ game on Sunday in the Big South. The fifth seed in the Big South, Longwood, earns an auto bid, having to beat the 1 and 2 seeds along the way in High Point and UNC Asheville. Similar situation in the Ohio Valley. Morehead State beating the top 2 seeds back-to-back nights, which included a 14-point win over top seed Little Rock in the Champ game there. James Madison in the Sun Belt, and Samford takes it home in the SoCon. So some bids in the books, no top seeds yet, which hopefully we get to here shortly. We have 5 tournaments that can have a winner cemented tonight. I like Gonzaga to win the WCC, but still trying to figure out some other action here in the CAA. I know you like the College of Charleston, the Horizon League Northeast, and the Summit League all in action today.
Yeah, a lot of good games today. It's a fun day of college basketball. We've already kicked it off, already started. The one thing I will say, you're right, Storm, we haven't seen a one seed win. But Drake was a very good two seed. Even Morehead State was 14-4 in conference. They were tied with the two seeds above them. So they're a very good team. Then James Madison, a team I'm looking forward to bet in the March Madness tournament, the actual bracket. I'm hoping we get like a 12-13, try and take them for a first round upset. They were 31-3 this year. So very good team as well. So we still got some interesting teams in there. College of Charleston tonight, I laid the 9.5 with them. That game is up to 10 now. I would still lay the 10. I think this is a situational spot for College of Charleston. That's a very positive for them. You've got an opponent who's coming in here playing four games in 4 days, double OT game 2 days ago, a tough game against Hofstra last night. And College of Charleston's able to get the job and cover it tonight. And then that Gonzaga St. Mary's game is going to be phenomenal. We're seeing St. Mary's, they're going to be a little shorthanded on the inside, missing a forward and a center. That's why we've seen this line move all the way out to -3.5. I wrote the preview for VSiN.com for the WCC and picked Gonzaga in there at -105. I wish I had bet that. I did not actually bet it. It'd be nice to have that -105 right now number on the money line, since that's up to -175.
You know what? And forgive me, Samford was a one seed. So we've had one of the six. Okay. So I wasn't that far off. One of the six. Samford was a favorite, was a one seed against ETSU in that final. But as far as the big conferences go, like, things are getting underway. Big 12, SEC starting tomorrow, Pac-12 starting tomorrow, Mountain West. I know, like, in terms of general college sports, you don't think of that as a big conference, but a team that's been talked about is getting a ton of teams into the NCAA tournament this year. Which ones are you primarily looking at in addition to, I know you said you like Kentucky in the SEC, but elsewhere?
I like Florida in the SEC, 20-1. So I'll be watching that one pretty closely. The Big East and the Big 12 tournaments are very interesting to me. Michael was on last segment there, Michael Calabrese for Action Network, and he talked about Baylor. That's a team I talked about on a numbers game yesterday at 7-1. I think they're an interesting team if you want to play someone in the Big 12. They get to avoid the Houston half of the bracket so that you can, again, if they can get to the finals, you have an opportunity to monetize the ticket if you do want to try and play some Houston back there to make sure you put yourself in a profitable situation, or just let it roll here with a Baylor team that played Houston very close. They've got the talent. They can rebound the ball very well. BYU, the other team that I'm a little bit interested in this conference, I'm not sure I want to take them to win the conference tournament at 15-1. They will definitely pay more if you just do a money line parlay and manufacture it game by game simply by betting BYU on the money line, because they'll be a dog in the majority of their games. They would have to face Houston. They're on that side of the bracket. So I think the Big 12 tournament is going to be interesting, especially with how much hype we've had around the conference so far this year. And then for me, the other one's the Big East. UConn sitting there as one of the biggest favorites for any conference tournament to be able to win that. I'm not so sure this is an open shut case for UConn to be able to win the tournament. Yes, they're going to be motivated, but this isn't their goal. They're going to get a one seed regardless of what happens in this tournament. I want to look to the other side again, and we've got a Creighton team, which we've been talking about home road three-point percentages. Creighton struggles on the road, especially shooting the three ball. It's a big part of their offense. We saw them absolutely stomp UConn at home and then go on the road and get clobbered because they couldn't make threes there. Marquette would be the three seed in that side. They would get to play Creighton in the semifinals to take on the UConn side of the bracket. So I have a little interest in Marquette sitting at 5-1 on the board in the Big East as well. I think that you get the right route for those teams. And it's important to make sure you know what route you have to go through if you're betting these conference tournaments. And ironically, a great resource for that, Stormy, is actually Wikipedia. If you go onto Wikipedia, they have every single conference tournament with when the games are going to be played and the seeds that are playing each other, so you could know exactly what route your team would be taking to be able to cut down the nets.
Yeah, very, very helpful. Who knew? Wikipedia, yeah. actually is real. It's helpful. And they are still bugging me for those 99 cents, though, every time that I try to log on. I see, and I feel bad because I want to keep having Wikipedia, but I do not want to donate to the cause. So let's figure something out there, people. What about in the ACC? North Carolina, +150 favorite. Duke not far behind at all, +160. And then the odds kind of fall off a ledge there. Do you think that it is the two-horse race that the odds imply in the Atlantic Coast?
I do. I'm pretty high on both this North Carolina and the Duke team. I've got a North Carolina ticket at 18-1 to win the NCAA tournament. I've got Duke at +550 to make the Final Four. I think both of these teams are capable of making deep runs in the tournament. And the depth in this league, not nearly as good as what we've seen from other years. You got Clemson sitting there at +850. They would be the one team that I would look at a little bit more. But again, I don't think the +850 number is near what you're going to be able to get if you manufacture the parlay, because the route they're going to have to take, they'll have to beat both North Carolina and Duke. There'll be a dog in both those games. So you know you're getting plus money prices in both of those spots. So they're another team where if I'm going to play them and I like the higher seeds to advance, manufacturing the parlay with a team like Clemson is going to pay a lot more than just betting that straight +850. pre-conference tournament. But I do think this is going to be Duke UNC. If I had to pick one, I think UNC is the better team. They're able to score on pretty much anybody. And when they want to play defense, they can play defense. And unlike Kentucky, unlike Alabama, they are actually good when they try. And I believe that you're going to see a more motivated North Carolina defense once we get to tournament time. It's going to make a difference for this squad, which is just ultra talented on the offensive end.
Well, and that's kind of my thought process in following up there. North Carolina, do you view them as a true contender come tournament time in the Big Dance?
I do. I mean, they have everything that you want. They can shoot the ball. They have an inside presence. The defense, again, has been the bugaboo for them. It doesn't show up every single game. However, when they do show up, they are very good on that side of the ball. I think you're going to see a motivated team. And when you have motivation, you generally see that defense spike up. They also have multiple scorers on that team. It's a team that can score in the half court. They can get out and run. It's an offense that doesn't rely solely on the three-point shot. That's big to me as well when you're getting these new sight lines every weekend. So I think North Carolina has a legitimate shot. We're seeing them on the board right now at 18-1. So you're able to get the price that I got in at. I think it's a good number for North Carolina. We'll see how they draw. I think that's going to matter for them. I don't want to be with Houston. I don't want to be with UConn. But if they end up in either of the other brackets, I think they have a very good shot to get to the Final Four.
How about in the Pac-12 getting underway tomorrow here from Las Vegas at T-Mobile Arena, Arizona, an odds on -160 favorite in this spot. And then the odds fall off similar to the Big East, Colorado 5-1, as is Washington State, who did pretty well in the regular season against Arizona. So what do you think this Pac-12 looks like? Is it really Arizona just power rated that much higher than everybody else? Or could there be opportunity for one of those underdogs?
From a power rating perspective, this is Arizona's tournament to lose, and that the price is correct on them to be able to win this. It's really Arizona and everybody else, and the question is, who is that two? Who is the three inside the conference? I think Washington State pretty clearly stamped themselves as the second-best team in this conference. I'm surprised they're the same price with Colorado, but at the same time, the price isn't near what I'd want to be able to bet if I'm going to bet this to win the tournament. So this is a game-by-game tournament for me. I do like some of the matchups. I think USC has been playing some better basketball. I think they have a shot at making a run here in the conference tournament, and they need to. Ohio State, similarly, in the Big Ten, they're another team that has to make a run, and they have the talent to do so. We've seen them shoot the ball a little bit better since switching head coaches. So if you're looking at teams in major conferences that could try and seal a bid, to me, USC and Ohio State are the two teams that could try and pull it off. I'm not going to bet either of them pre-tournament, but they are teams I'm interested in a game-by-game situation in these tournaments.
Okay, 90 seconds left here. In the Mountain West Conference, also set to tip off tomorrow, how many teams realistically could win this league?
Seven, probably. it's been a wild conference. And home court advantage in the Mountain West is huge as well. I mean, you've got New Mexico in there. They're at the Pit. Nevada is a very tough place to play. San Diego State's a very tough place to play. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. The one thing I will say is, I wouldn't just assume home court advantage here for UNLV. And since it is in Las Vegas, people are going to think, oh, well, hey, it's like a home game for them. It's not. To me, this is a situation where I think UNLV is not at as big of an advantage as some people will think going into this tournament. But it's wide open, Stormy. I mean, Utah State, very good basketball team. This is going to be a fun conference tournament through and through. And I think you end up seeing five, maybe six teams in the NCAA dance from the Mountain West.
And to that point of you thinking seven teams could realistically win it, seven are +750 or shorter odds. And then those last four teams are 250-1 and higher. So it is a massive difference there. San Diego State, your favorite at +260, but their opening matchup against UNLV, the Rebels just having beat them on the 5th, 62-58. And the Mountain West does like to clarify to your point about it not being, you know, total home court advantage. The Mountain West brings their own court, okay? This is not UNLV's court, and they want to make sure that that is clear. We're wrapping things up here next on the Lombardi Line. Mike Somich has a ton of action, best bets for the day. We're going to lay out.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the app and use the promo code VSIN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. And time now for a message from Total Wine & More. With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite, all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine & More. Please drink responsibly. Must be 2021. Alongside Mike Somich in for Michael Lombardi today, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We are wrapping things up today on the Lombardi Line, and we've got lots of action to hit on because Mike always comes to the program locked and loaded with bets, including one that we're sweating out right now. A good start in the first half for Notre Dame. You laid the 1.5 points. They are up 41-29 with 1:54 left before the break. Let's hang on, Fighting Irish. What else in college hoops are you looking at though tonight, though, you want to make sure that we discuss?
Yeah, we're going to take a look at two other college hoops games tonight. So we talked quite a bit about College of Charleston today. I laid 9.5 with them against Stony Brook. Just to me, a great spot here. Stony Brook, 4 games in 4 days, double overtime, 2 back. Is a game where I know Will Hill was on the opposite side, Michael Calabrese on our side. So it's a back and forth game there. Charleston, another team that, look, even if you're not betting the game, watch it, enjoy it. They're a team that you're going to see in the NCAA tournament if they're able to get the W tonight. That could upset somebody. You mentioned Notre Dame, laid the 1.5, up 12 right now in the first half. So love that start. Then we're going to go to Canisius. We're going to take the +3.5. They're taking on Mount St. Mary's today. These two teams have played twice. Both were 5-point games. Canisius got outshot from the 3-point line in both of those games. So if we're hoping for a little less 3-point variance here, these two teams shoot about the same. I believe Canisius is slightly better. We're catching 3.5 on a neutral. So we'll take Canisius plus the 3.5 today as well, Stormy.
I know you love looking at these mid-major conferences, and this leads us to our pro tip of the day. And we have free daily betting tips on vsin.com, searchable by show and by sport, but every single show does these. Just talking about those mid-major conferences and how looking into them can give you a great potential for a Cinderella team in the NCAA tournament. And I know College of Charleston specifically, who you mentioned there, that's a team that, you know, is a top seed, poised to get their automatic bid and potential to make a run.
Yeah, I think it's important to pay attention to these conference tournaments because you do have teams that are very talented. Grand Canyon, a team that we're going to start hearing quite a bit about. They're in the WAC tournament there in Las Vegas later this week. I have them rated as a middle-of-the-road Big 12 team. Yet they're not going to get very much buzz heading into the NCAA tournament. And they're in a fortunate spot. Tarleton State, the number 2 seed in that tournament, is ineligible to be able to go to the final, to the NCAA tournament, because they were a D2 team last year. So as long as Tarleton State, the 2 seed or the 1 seed Grand Canyon makes it, Grand Canyon will go into the tournament. They're one to keep an eye on. McNeese State, one to keep an eye on. We've mentioned Drake and Indiana State. Those two faced off in the OVC final. They're two teams that I think are worth keeping an eye on. So watching these mid-major conference tournaments are important because these teams that get in are the ones who often will end up upsetting teams as the 12-5 matchup. You'll see 11 seeds make a run. So I love watching these tournaments because it helps you get ahead of that early move that you're going to see, because once these lines get posted, you're going to see a lot of movement in the first 30 minutes. And if you know what mid-majors you're interested in and you like the matchup, you can get ahead of those line moves come Selection Sunday.
And there is always one. You think about how far FAU got last year. San Diego State made the national championship. Furman from the SoCon won a couple of games last year. So
Loyola Chicago.
Exactly. It always happens. And even because you talk about the conference and how some teams making that transition to Division One aren't eligible to make it. Last year, Merrimack doesn't make it into the tournament. Fairleigh Dickinson does. And then what do they go do but beat Purdue in that historic matchup in the 16-1. And I can just already feel the laser beams blazing out of our producer Elliot's head toward me. So I'm not even looking up in that direction about it. A Purdue fan through and through, but he has faith. Zach Edey and Matt Painter winning coach of the year, that they're going to really pull through this year. You also have some NHL action coming up today, 10 games on tap in the National Hockey League. You've got bets in 3. What's your favorite hockey bet that you've got coming up?
Ooh, good question, Stormy. Look, we talked about this last week. We cashed on the first period under last week, Stormy. The NHL is an interesting beast here. Early in the season, you see a lot of overs in the NHL, and you see the books adjust. You'll see 6.5, some sixes, the juice to the over. We're starting to get into the undertime of the NHL season now. Once the trade deadline happens, you have a lot more jockeying for position from a playoff perspective. That means you're going to see different styles from these teams. You're going to see slower starts. You're going to see more defensive battles. And especially that happens when you get playoff teams playing each other. I really like the Panthers Stars first period under 1.5 tonight. They're two teams that are two of the better teams in the NHL. Both are very good defensively, but like to score. Well, I'm going to say the defense wins out tonight in a game that could be a Stanley Cup Finals preview. It's similar to what we looked at with the Canes last week. So we'll take the first period under Panthers Stars. That's under 1.5 -105. I will take another first period under Stormy, too. We're going to go right back to that Hurricane team. When they're at home, they play very good defense, and they generally start pretty slow. They want to play more of a trap-style defense, which means that they're not going to get as many breakouts, not as many opportunities on the offensive end. They're going to want to control the puck. They're taking on the Rangers tonight. Again, two teams who are very good in the Eastern Conference. This is going to have a playoff-style atmosphere there in Raleigh, a very good arena. I think we're going to see this one go under in the first period as well. That is under 1.5. Minus 105 as well. Shop these unders around too. I've seen anywhere from minus 105 to plus 110 on a couple of these games. So make sure you're getting the best number when you're looking for these first period unders. And then Stormy, we didn't get to talk about the trade deadline. I love what your Vegas Golden Knights did. They went out, they picked up Noah Hanifin, who is one of the best defensemen on the market. They went out and got Tomas Hertl, who's got 6 years left on his deal, so making an investment there. And they went out and got Anthony Mantha, who's someone who's not going to get a lot of talk about, but he was a highly touted prospect, very big guy, great hands, really, really fast, up in Detroit. That organization was a mess when he was there. He went to Washington. There was a motivational issue. He was not playing up to his potential. Now he's going to an organization, the Vegas Golden Knights, who I think he is going to flourish with. So I like that move quite a bit at the deadline as well. I think Vegas is going to start playing their best hockey of the season right now. I'm going to lay the 1.5 with them tonight, get a huge plus money number here, plus 170, plus 175, depending on where you're looking, for the Vegas Golden Knights to beat the Seattle Kraken, a team that is played well. They were better than everyone expected last year. They've been about on par, but sliding a little bit recently. I think the Vegas Golden Knights go in there, take care of business, and beat them by two or more. So we'll take Vegas Golden Knights -1.5 plus 170 and first period unders in the Panthers Stars and the Rangers and Hurricane.
Can you maybe, like, I wish that I had a better answer on this. So I'm hoping maybe you can talk me through it a little bit. How do the Golden Knights do it with Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee that they always seem to be playing chess when everybody else is playing checkers when it comes to player acquisition, that they can get these big name players and remain cap compliant? And like, you just look at the players that they have, obviously who you just referenced and bringing in Tomas Hertl among them, but Mark Stone, Jack Eichel, Max Pacioretty, Barbashev, Alec Martinez, Chandler's, I mean, how do they do it?
Well, some organizations are just better at this than others, Stormy. And the Vegas Golden Knights are one of the organizations that are just better. Mark Stone, also an interesting case. Because he's on long-term IR and in the NHL, if you put someone on long-term IR, you get the cap space reopened up once you make that move. And they've done that at the trade deadline the last 2 years, which has opened up $9.5 million worth of cap space for them. So it allows them to go out and make these deadline deal acquisitions. And that's been a big part of why they've been able to make the moves they've made the last 2 years. Now, they've made the right moves, which you have to give them credit for, but they're gaming the system and then going out and making the most out of that potential assets that they're creating. So you got to respect what they're doing there. And I love the idea of bringing Tomas Hertl in. Again, an ultra-talented player who is in a bad organization. When you go from a bad organization to a good organization, you can get the most out of these guys. And often you'll see these guys flourish with that new scenery. And, you know, unlike the NFL, where it's hard to see a quarterback switch position or switch franchises and just blossom, in the NHL, a goal scorer switching franchises can make a massive difference because of what line they end up on, the talent that is with them, and then just the rejuvenation. If you're playing for something every night, that makes it a lot easier to go out there and really give everything you got, especially when you see everyone else on your team doing it every night. That's not things that Mantha and Hertl have seen recently. So I think that's going to be big steps. You're going to see big steps forward for both of them.
Yeah, it sounds like a mutually beneficial situation. They get a new change of scenery, and the Golden Knights, who have been struggling lately, lost 4 of 5, 8 of 10. They can get back on track a little bit here. Still 12-1 to repeat as Stanley Cup champions, which really surprised me given where they had been at this year. But then you get acquisitions like that, and if they can have that chemistry and gel, why not? Who do you like right now? Eastern Conference, Western Conference, the standouts?
I like the Canes in the East. I think the Canes and the Panthers, who have been on top in the East, are the two best teams over there. I'm interested in your Golden Knights, Stormy, but okay, Keep an eye on the Avalanche. I love what the Avalanche did at the deadline as well. They traded Bo Bynum, who was going to be someone who like has Cal Makar style skills, but you're going to need to pay him. So it didn't make sense to keep him on your second defensive pair. They went out and got Casey Mittelstadt, who was the 8th overall draft pick in his year, to play second line center for them. He is going to be very good on that Colorado team. I think Colorado's scary once we get to the playoffs. from the West. I'm shocked that the Oilers are the favorites to win the Cup and to win the West. They shouldn't be. To me, there's some value if you're looking for other teams.
Yeah, plus 350 in the Western Conference, 8-1 to win it all. The Florida Panthers, 6-1, the shortest shot right now to ultimately win it all. Then those Canes, who you mentioned, 8-1, Colorado plus 850, Boston 9-1, the Rangers 10-1, and your Golden Knights 12-1. Awesome time today. Mike, thanks so much for filling in. This was fun.
This was a blast. A great day to talk all the free agency. Happy to have college basketball back. And I love talking hockey with you, Stormy. I'm glad we got to do it.
Absolutely. So much more than just the one spot we have all week. And make sure you check out Mike as well as Matt Brown on The Handle every Saturday and Sunday from 9 to noon Pacific. That's a wrap on today's edition of The Lombardi Line.